to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to The Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the show. But before we get started, I wanted to give you all the opportunity to hop in our group at facebook.com/group/nonprofitarchitect. We're running a contest right now for your chance to win a $200 donation. We're not just building stronger nonprofits by giving you the actionable steps to do what you do better, but we're also putting our money where our mouth is. And if you sign up for the contest and the rules are in the group, that you will get the chance to win a $200 donation and have a direct, real-world, real-time impact to your mission. If you're struggling with fundraising, if you're unsure of how to handle a board, if you're not sure where to go and what your next steps are because you have this endless list of things to do, you can also sign up for the Nonprofit Architect Alliance Mastermind Group. Real easy, real low barrier of entry at $50 a month to get in with other leaders like yourself that find themselves stuck. Help let other people in the group solve your problems. If you're doing this thing as a solo shop or without a lot of support from your board, it's hard to know who to go talk to. It's hard to know what to do next. And if you're doing this alone, chances are you're not gonna get very far. If you wanna go fast, go alone. If you wanna go far, go as a group. So also in the group, sign up for the Nonprofit Architect Alliance Mastermind Group and let the experts help build your stronger nonprofit each and every month. Now let's go to the interview. Hey, welcome to the show. I have a special guest for you today. Lane Ballone is a former Green Beret, and he's going to talk about leadership and how to know who you are. How are you doing today?
Doing great, man. Glad to be on the podcast.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I've seen a lot of your work. I'm in the same kind of groups that you are. I even talked to your partner, Stephen, several weeks ago. I think he was episode number 50, a great guy to have on the show. If you haven't listened to that episode, his partner, Stephen, talks about how to turn your website into an active employee, more than just a digital pamphlet that talks about your mission that has a donate button. So definitely check out his episode. But Lane here, like I said, former Green Beret, helps veterans achieve their purpose, reach optimal performance, and he builds trust and adaptability within executive teams, forming them into a laser-focused A-team. He's travel is his big thing. He loves traveling, and who doesn't? He's been to over 40 countries, loves climbing mountains, roughing it in the Arctic, and he helps leading others to break through their unknowns and stepping into their greatness. Definitely check him out at QOLEnterprises.com. That's quality of life. Lane, you are just a powerhouse. How are you?
Yeah, doing well. I mean, today's a beautiful day. A lot of stuff going on in the world, as everyone can probably relate. But glad to be here with you and talk about leadership and helping people step into their greatness.
Oh, absolutely. And just for the listeners out there, we're recording this the morning after the election, when we still don't know who the president is for the next 4 years. So, you know, we were up a little late trying to figure out what was happening, maybe see a speech from somebody. We got nothing. We're so unsatisfied, and we're going to take it out on you today as we talk about leadership. I don't know if take it out is the right word, but Lane is not in the nonprofit world, but he is a leadership expert and guru, is what I hear from everyone except for Lane. He is the embodiment of what they have dubbed, Stephen and himself, a humble alpha or a humble alpha leader. What is a humble alpha, and how that might that apply to the nonprofit world?
Yeah, humble alpha is a concept that Stephen and I put together to marry up this kind of business mind and mindset plus purpose and achieving performance in life, and marrying these two together, because so many people want to perform at a high level, but they also want to have purpose in what they're doing. And so the Humble Alpha Method, the Humble Alpha Book, the Humble Alpha Leadership Model is marrying these two differences, because as we move forward, people are going to use vehicles such as nonprofits and businesses to help amplify their own individual purpose. And the Humble Alpha Leadership Model is exactly that. And the secret, though, is to establish yourself as an individual by identifying your identity and your individual purpose. And then from that position, you'll be able to build empowering teams around you, elevate all those within your organization so that way you can achieve your bigger mission of your nonprofit or your business.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing like being in a network meeting and someone's like, oh, tell me about yourself. And then you're like, oh God, who am I? I don't know. And you, you invariably, people end up describing themselves through titles like, oh, I'm this position or a company, or I'm a Marine Corps veteran, or, you know, I'm a dad, or I'm a Christian, or whatever those labels are, but they don't ever really describe or define who they are as a person without those roles. And that affects people greatly, not only in the veteran world, which Lynn and I are both a part of. You know, once you lose that rank, you've identified with that for so long and that mission that you've identified for so long, but it applies in the nonprofit world. The turnover rate between executive directors and fundraisers is anywhere between 12 and 24 months. So if you are on the board of one of these organizations, you might turn over two or three executive directors before your term is done. And people in the organization, many times they find themselves by their title. How do you reconcile this as a person that might switch jobs frequently or has lost something that, you know, they really define themselves by?
Yeah, so this is actually a great parallel, because in the special operations community, there is it's not really a high turnover rate because of stress or anything like that. It's just the way the military is set up, to where a military leader for, let's say, a Special Forces Operation Detachment Alpha, a 12-man ODA, is the leadership is about 12 to 24 months for those leadership roles, both for the enlisted and for the officer roles. So this is a great parallel, because special operations has a really pinpointed mission. Nonprofits have a very, really pinpointed mission. There's a lot of parallels. And so in my experience in being able to differentiate the leaders that really did well in those 12 or 24 months versus those that were stressed out, couldn't get a hold of, you know, themselves or the team, or being able to actually accomplish the mission that they were sent there to do, was a few things. And first thing is, before you get into that leadership position, you are already a leader within yourself, and you know exactly who you are. You know exactly what you stand for, because it was always those leaders that relied on the title of, yes, I'm a Special Forces Operation Detachment Alpha team sergeant or team leader. You know, so they would rely on that as their authority, or their being able to dictate what the influence is for the team, versus those guys that were just already incredibly experienced. They had the leadership style, that they had this humble alpha leadership style, to where they were very extremely competent and confident with their skill set, their experience. And they're like, everyone's like, damn, that guy just knows his shit. You know what I mean? Like, he's been here, has all this experience. And then he comes in and he's just like, it's exactly who I am. This is how we're going to do it. And he just melds his own personal leadership experience into the team dynamic. And being able to, there's an art to being able to come into a new organization or an organization that you haven't been part of and meld your own powerful leadership experience with what the organization or that team is already doing. Because we all know those leaders that go in and just, you know, just wreck shop and say, hey, this is how we're going to do it. You know, this is how I've done it in the past, you know, and they disenfranchise the rest of the team. But being able to meld that personal knowing, that leadership style that they have and that experience into the team dynamic, being able to figure that out is really a key part to being successful, especially if it's potentially going to be a short stint of 12 to 24 months in that leadership position.
Yeah, it's the same in the aviation world. Your CO comes in for a two-year chunk. They do a year as executive officer, and then a year as the commanding officer, and they're gone. So they do get a little bit of lead-up time, but really they're just seeing kind of the different roles that they haven't experienced in the past and seeing some of the different things you need to pay attention to, and they go right on doing. And I know in the nonprofit world, a lot of people get put into these positions that weren't really chosen. They looked at the group of people and like, all right, you're running the fundraiser next year or next week. And they're like, what? I don't know how to do fundraiser. The big difference that I've seen, the thing that really kind of just like kills me coming from the military and the nonprofit world, is that in the military, you're trained to do everything, anything and everything they want you to do. They send you to some kind of training, some kind of qualification process, some kind of required reading for you to be able to do the job. They don't let you do it until you are qualified to do it. And in the nonprofit world, it seems just to be delegated as a lack of other options. Like, hey, that guy left and there's only one other person here and I'm not doing it, so you got it. And I don't see too many organizations, and I deal with mostly startups. I don't see too many startups that have a dedicated training path. They don't have money set aside for training, conferences, continuing education, coaches, leadership development. They don't have money set aside for those things. And, you know, you understand why, but that really leaves a huge vacuum and a huge void when someone comes in. You had maybe a terrible leader before, and you're coming in not knowing what's going on. You have a board that you may or may not know, and you've got to pick up all the pieces and run with it as soon as you can, and you have no idea what you're doing. But I like the number one, that you come in already knowing that you're a leader without the title.
Yeah, that really begins with awareness. And it's aware of yourself first. You're aware of your own experience. You're aware of your flaws. You're aware of your skill sets, your strengths. And with this awareness, you can know where your best efforts are. And so that knowing within yourself is first and foremost. And once you figure that out, that's a huge piece of the puzzle, because then you can find complement skill sets, complement strengths for your own weaknesses. And if you look at yourself as part of a bigger picture as a team, then it's much easier for you to identify those key skill sets that you need and to be able to bring that out within each team member. So awareness of yourself is first, and then awareness of your team members is second, because knowing other people's strengths, knowing other people's weaknesses, knowing their human needs, we talk about this in our book and the empowerment stage, being able to understand how people, you know, the psychology of people's needs and what their behavior is trying to tell everyone around them, because everyone is expressing exactly who they are. You know, we have those people that are always compensated for something because they feel like they need that feeling of, hey, you did a great job, or hey, I see you, or hey, you need recognition for all of your efforts. And we all need that to a certain extent, but you know, we know people that need that a lot versus, you know, other people that don't need it so much. So understanding this awareness of yourself and those around you is incredibly important, because the leader is going to automatically identify what is needed for the next step. Because we all know those people that are the junior guys, the guys that are in the medium experience of the organization, but automatically they quickly become the go-to people because they have this awareness about themselves, they have this awareness about their team members, and they can start moving pieces of the puzzle around and say, hey, we have this skill set that, hey, Joe over here is really great at this. And so let's cultivate that within the entire organization. And for us to be aware of that, that is really incredibly powerful, because that has no title. That has no official role besides being the go-to guy, or being that guy that's just shit hot, or the guy that, you know, everybody looks to them for, hey, what should we do? You know, and even those junior people are going to then fill those ranks. And so if you're listening to this right now, and if you're not already a leader in a specific title, this awareness piece is going to be incredibly powerful for you once you comprehend it fully, because you're automatically going to be the leader without the title. And then you're going to be given more responsibility. People are going to look to you for advice and wisdom on how do we take this next step? How do we figure out funding? How do we figure out all these different aspects of the nonprofit world or business, right? And to be able to be aware of that, you're going to be the go-to guy without a title. And then eventually you're going to have that title. And then you're going to be able to use that title to amplify it even more with that awareness, with that ability to bring out the best in everyone around them. And I think that's a really powerful, potent way to operate in the world.
Total agreement. So what this might look like in another scenario, we talk about it in aviation as a designated leader, that's a title, and a functional leader, that's an ability. So when we go and deploy and we have our flight engineer who is the master of all things mechanical on the airplane, he can absolutely do that. He's not necessarily the highest ranking guy, but that is his function and he can do that. Same way with you're out with a bunch of people and you've got the leader of the group of friends and they do everything, but your car breaks down. And even though this other person's not the, you know, the designated leader of the friendship group, that's the guy that knows everything about cars. And that's who you're going to defer to automatically to let him handle the situation. What this might look like if you were in a startup nonprofit is you might be the kind of person that is very detail oriented, very structured, very minute details, but you might need someone that's the big thinker and the visionary to come in and compliment you. So together you guys can lead a good organization. What you don't want to do is be the visionary and bring in two or three other visionaries, because you're going to have all the talks and all the great excitement in the world, but then nothing's going to get done because you need those people that are going to do the day-to-day, the nitty-gritty, the admin work, whatever you want to call it, to get the needle moving forward. You need that other balance, that other component, that other, the yin to your yang to get that thing solidified and moving forward. But understanding who you are and where your strengths are, and I've mentioned this before, I'm not the tech guy. I'm not the podcast mixer. I have people for that. I suck at it. I'm okay with sucking at it because I'm better at other things. I let them do what they're good at and I do what I'm good at and everything's fine.
Absolutely. And the thing is, being able to be aware of that of yourself and your skill sets, the things that you like to do within the organization are incredibly powerful, because then you're able to allow yourself to focus on the next step for your growth or the organization. And, you know, being able to allow yourself to do that is just incredibly potent.
Absolutely. You know, you don't see NBA players working on their tackling skills. Like, that's not something that they do. They let the football players handle that stuff. You don't see the linemen in a football game dropping back to pass, because that's not their job. They know what their role is. They become experts in their role. And if they're good enough at that, then they reach the level of, you know, the NFL, and they're doing that for their full-time job. There's nothing wrong with being multi-talented and multifaceted. And if you're a startup nonprofit, chances are you're wearing all the hats. You are the janitor and the CEO doing everything.
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to bring up, is that's a critical component, because whenever you're starting up, you have to wear these 17 different hats. And what that's going to allow you to do is, if you're hungry enough, and if you're willing to get your hands dirty and get that experience on not just getting a good enough answer, but doing it to the best of your ability, it's going to allow you to have that experience of, at least from a macro point of view, what it takes to have a good marketing philosophy, or being able to have fundraising strategies, or having these different areas in which you may be the only person doing all these different hats in the beginning. But as you grow, you'll be able to identify the people that are actually good at it. Because the worst thing is that you start growing, you know, and then you start to identify people to fill these roles that you don't no longer need to, because your business is growing, your nonprofit's growing, and you're going to potentially hire somebody or bring somebody on that isn't good at marketing or isn't good at fundraising. That's like the worst, you know what I mean? So by you being able to give it your all, get the experience and understand it from a macro point of view, that you're going to be able to continue to have that full picture of the organization, because you know what a good marketing person looks like, you know what a good fundraiser looks like, or, you know, all these different skill sets, you know what a good tech person looks like, because that's the worst. You know, you're doing all this stuff and you're doing it okay, because you see the pieces put in together for the organization, and then you try to hand off the tech. You know, hey, do my website. Hey, do the funnel, or hey, do this fundraising thing. And then they suck at it. They don't see the vision, or they don't. So having that experience of wearing all those hats allows you to be the glue of the vision, if that's your role in the organization.
So we talked about coming in already being a leader, whatever that looks like for you, the awareness of self, knowing what your strengths and weaknesses are and where you can really use some help. And just because you need help in an area, it doesn't make you helpless. Right? We all have those areas that we need feedback on, we need help with, we need someone else to do it because we don't have the time, whatever the reason is. Asking for help doesn't make you helpless. What else? What's the next part of this?
Well, it's being able to identify it, first and foremost. So you come from a place of awareness and you identify what needs to happen and how you can put the pieces to together, how you can empower the team. So it's good to identify and see it. But the most critical part is actually doing it. And sometimes that's what people can have trouble with, is they can identify what actions need to be taken. They can identify these things, but they actually don't take action on it because they're too timid. They feel like, hey, who am I to give advice or to give or influence some kind of direction? And to be able to speak that wisdom or speak that advice is the next step, and to be able to voice that in a humble alpha way. So it's being able to have that humble alpha power to be able to say, I know what the next step is. This is my recommendation. Do it in a respectful way, because of course there's hierarchies, there's structures to businesses, nonprofits, but being able to step into that meeting or to have that conversation with confidence and say, hey, this is my opinion based on my experiences. This is what I'm looking at, and this is what I recommend, and to be able to then take action on it. So that's a critical part, because many people don't take action like they should. That they have all these ideas. They say, oh, they should be doing this. And oh, if I was in a leadership position, I would do that. Well, you don't need to be, you don't need to have that title in order for you to act. So by you acting based on your experience and your awareness, you're going to move the needle, and you're just going to make stuff happen, and you're going to have the right conversations with the people. You're going to empower those that are doing the fundraising or doing the tech or doing X, Y, and Z within the organization. So taking action based on that knowingness and experience and that awareness that you have within yourself and those that are around you, you're going to just continue to move the needle and everywhere you go. And you're going to be this integral part of the organization, to where I don't know exactly what this guy does. He's technically like a middle guy, or he's kind of new, but he's just making stuff happen. And that reputation that you're going to build just by you being you, you being aware of yourself and being able to be aware of other people around you, and then taking action on that awareness is going to take you far. It's going to allow you to step into those roles of responsibility. They're going to amplify the mission of the nonprofit, mission of the business, and to be able to say, wow, I don't know this guy, I don't know this gal, but she's just on it. And everything that she touches almost turns to gold.
I know there's people listening to this that volunteer and do different things. Like, you don't have to have any special skills to be involved in business or nonprofit at the beginning. You don't. But the things you can control, you can show up on time. You can have a great attitude. In the Navy, we call it a can-do attitude. What's that mean? Oh, I can do it. Whatever the thing is, I can do it. I can figure it out. I can take a class. I can, sort of a call with Lane. I can figure this out, and I can do it. I can do. And have that good can-do attitude. And showing up and having a great attitude carries through everything that you do. Eventually, you're going to have the skills. Eventually, you're going to have the leadership. Eventually, you're going to know who you are. And you're going to be able to build those things, even if you don't have any specialized training. So don't think that because you haven't already had these jobs that you can't make yourself get there one day.
Start where you're at. Absolutely. And it doesn't matter what skill sets that you have right now. If you're hungry enough, if you're enthusiastic enough, and you're driven enough, you're just going to make stuff happen, and you're going to build those skill sets. You're going to build that experience. And then all these almost intangible skill sets are going to come one day, and you're like, oh, I, was a big part of making this, donation thing happen, or this event happen, or this to happen. And then you start to have this reputation and this credibility under your belt. And then you can then just continue to amplify that. But it's, if you're in that position right now where you don't have a lot of accolades or even a lot of experience or skill sets, all you got to do is be hungry enough and enthusiastic enough from a humble alpha way to not try to get credit for everything, not try to prove the world that, hey, this is, what I can do. But it's just about you just expanding your skill set experience and then being able to radiate that value within your organization and, of course, outside the organization.
Absolutely. And I've been going through your book, Unleash the Humble Alpha, Unleash Your Humble Alpha. And it's not, for those listening, it's not you becoming a humble alpha. It's you defining those two or three words that make sense to you and fit you as a person. And I'm going through this and I'm like, I don't even know who I am. How do I know? How do I define these things? And the book is great. It walks you through a process to define, you know, discover your zone of greatness. What are you really excited and passionate about? What do you have skill sets? What do people tell you that you do easily? And you, through the process, it helps you define who you are and distills it down to a couple of words of your choosing that you can use. So if you're going through the book, you won't call yourself a humble alpha. When you're done, you'll call yourself something else. I always default to me. They're like, who are you? I'm like, oh, I'm Travis. I'm always Travis. I'll always be Travis, no matter what I'm doing or where I am. And people are like, what does that mean? I'm like, I don't walk into a party and I'm not timid and I know who I am and what I want and what I'm doing. I'm always me. And they're like, how do you do that? I was like, well, I don't, like, these people's opinions of me, they're going to have them, and whatever they are, they're none of my business. That's between them. I'm still going to be me. And so what that might look like as a party, people are like, man, this guy is wild and crazy. He has like no inhibition. No, I'm just me all the time. And once you're okay with it, you'd be like, oh, this is just you all the time. Absolutely. I'm always me all the time. And that's who I am and what I do. And I know Lane is the same way. I know your partner, Steven, is the same way.
One of the litmus tests is that, you know, if you're in your organization in a meeting and your significant other watches you or is a fly on the wall, would she recognize you? And then on the flip side, if you're at home with your wife or your family and the kids, and one of your coworkers or one of your partners is a fly on the wall, would they recognize you? Are you these two completely different people to where, you know, you're powerful in the boardroom, and you're just, you know, dictating this and this and this, and then you get home and you know, your wife and family doesn't really give you respect, you know? So these things are different sides of you. And of course, you know, how you act around your grandma and your spouse and your friends are all slightly different, but there's always a running thread of you're always going to be you. But if there's a significant difference like these, like this person's two different people. And once you can marry up the all these different sides of you, and you're just operating from exactly who you are, that's a really powerful place to be, to where you don't have to flip the switch of like, oh, I'm going to turn into boss mode. And there's a little bit of that when you turn on the hat or you put on the hat, but you're not changing your personality. You're not changing who you are, because you're always working from this fundamental position of, I know exactly who I am. I know exactly why I do the things that I do. And I'm intentional about everything that I do, whether that's work, play, or anywhere in between.
I love that intentionality. Doing things on purpose, doing things you mean to do on purpose. And what it looks like from the outside is consistency. And consistency is one of those things out there that helps you build credibility. It helps you build trust. And people understand who you are as a person inherently. When people come up to you and they say, oh, I've heard about you, what that should mean, and you should hope it means, is like, I know exactly who you are, because your raving fans out there know exactly who you are, what you do, and what you stand for. There shouldn't be a surprise. Oh, I've heard about you. And you're like, oh my goodness, what did you hear? Am I awful? Was it about that drunk weekend? Was it about that inappropriate photo I shared around at work? Was it about the wherever you're skirting the line at? Being consistent and showing up and always being who you are and who you're meant to be is going to ripple through every area of your life, whether if you're in nonprofit, whether you're still in the military, whether you're in business, or you're working for somebody else. It needs to be the same all the way through.
100%. You know, in the book, we talk about, you know, this consistency and one of the easiest ways to define how you operate in the world. And so part of the identity process of the Humble Alpha is to define your personality. And that's what Travis was talking about. And the second part is how you interact in the world. And how do I interact with myself? Well, how do I treat myself? How do I treat my mind? How do I treat my body? How do I treat my family? How do I treat my business or my nonprofit? How do I treat strangers? And so once you define how you interact in the world, and the more conciseness and clarity that you can come up with, that makes living in the world that much easier, because it's almost binary. Because if I treat all strangers with respect, no matter who they are, and I can walk in the world, and if I meet a stranger, well, if I treat them with respect, well, that's exactly how I want to act in the world. But if I don't, then that's incongruent with who I am. And so it becomes very binary in the beginning stages. And then it becomes a very intuitive thing to where that just becomes a part of you, because who we are is imprinted by every single experience that we've had in life. And by us defining the vision of how we're going to interact with the world, how we're going to operate, and what we see as ourselves in the future and what we are becoming, that leaves an imprint every single second. So every time we treat people with respect, if we treat ourselves with respect, treat our team members with respect, we're able to then imprint a new default within ourselves. And then it's just like the whole learning how to drive thing. You know, age 16, you don't know how to drive, but you go through those monotonous steps every single day. Well, every single day is an imprint on your behavior as you walk through life. And so as you're more intentional about who you are and how you interact in the world, it makes it that much easier for you to step into your greatness, step into that leader that you know you can become in order for you to accomplish your mission of, you know, growth in your nonprofit or reaching a certain milestone within your nonprofit to be able to say, because I did this, because I understood who I was and I was able to empower every single person with respect on my team and bring out the best in them and create space and allow them to step into their greatness. Boom. You're that person that makes everything turn into gold because you are who you are.
This consistency, we're talking about at work, we're talking about at home, and I know people that fit the bill, but then I go to lunch with them and they're driving. And so all of a sudden, they're a totally different person behind the wheel. You know these people who get in there, they're all soft and sweet, and they get in the car, I'm like, it's red, come on, go. It's green, what are you doing? You're crazy. How can you be going that fast? I think George Carlin said, you know, anyone that goes faster than you is a maniac. Anyone who drives slower than you is a moron. Obviously, they know you based on who you are. But that stuff applies. It applies to all the stuff you do. It applies in emails with someone you're not getting along with or that you provide services and they haven't paid you yet. It applies to when someone books a call with you and then turns out they don't show up for whatever reason. I've had that happen to me many times. And you can say, I can't believe how much they disrespected my time. Or you could say something like, man, I hope they're all right because I know this person isn't that kind of person and no one ever really does this intentionally. So I hope everything's okay in the world. When someone cuts you off in traffic, I'm like, man, I hope they're not rushing towards some kind of catastrophe in their world. And I can just slow down for a couple of seconds. I'm going to be where I'm going to go just fine. All that stuff applies. We're talking about election stuff. Whoever the president is going to be in the next 4 years is not going to affect my personal happiness. There's every president that comes along, they do things that I like, they do things that I don't agree with, they do some head-scratching things, I'm like, I can't believe they would do this, this is really weird. But it's not going to affect how I treat my family, it's not going to affect how I interact with my neighbors, it's not going to affect the love that I spread to everyone that I meet and everything that I do. Because it doesn't affect who I am as a person. Now, Gallup poll disagrees. It says 45% says the president affects their mood. If everything's affecting your mood, who's really in charge? Is the media in charge of your mood or are you in charge of your mood?
Well, that's an important thing to, you know, we operate under the internals whenever we know exactly who we are and what we do in life. And the externals in life allow them to be followed by the wayside. And they don't have as much a powerful influence. So like, you know, having people talk crap about you behind your back or, you know, competitors, you know, spewing whatever, or politicians or whatever is happening on the external world, they have much less effect because you know exactly who you are, you know exactly how you operate in the world. And it just makes it that much easier to say, you know what, I have a pretty good life. You know, yeah, I'm, you know, working on this nonprofit, I'm working on this business and it's not going great. But it's going pretty good and it's getting better every single day. I'm making connections, I'm making progress. And those external things that you can't control have much less effect on you.
If you're on the right side of the dirt, you still got fight left in you. There's still greatness to unleash. There's still things you can do, people you can impact, lives that you can change. If you're on the right side of the dirt, you're still going. Don't give up that fight. It sounds like we're building here and I'm just glancing through the index or the table of contents in your book. And we haven't talked about momentum yet. And I love the first section of that where it talks about relational capital. If you're in the nonprofit world, relational capital is in everything that you do. Every interaction you have, whether with the board, the executive director, the staff, the volunteers, or people you meet in the public, all that relational capital is what's going to get you to where you're trying to go. What advice do you have for someone that's starting out and they're trying to build relational capital?
Yeah, so relational capital is incredibly powerful. And so in the book, we talk about it in stage four, section four. Just to set the kind of stage or to build a little context, we have five stages, five sections in the book. First two are about the individual, you know, who you are, your identity, your purpose. The third section is about empowering your team within the organization. And then how we set it up in the book is that the fourth section is gaining momentum is about outside of your organization. So that's how we kind of build it from the inside out. Relational capital is happening all the time. And it's with everybody that you meet. It's with everybody within the organization, outside the organization. But what it really helps you with is building this momentum of joint ventures, partnerships, collaborations, and to be able to invest in other people around you and to be able to allow yourself to create value no matter where you go. And there's a lot of people that operate in the world that want to be compensated for their value that they provide in the world. And that's perfectly fine. But whenever you're providing value as just this radiant aspect of yourself, because you know exactly who you are, you're only going to exude value. So you can have a simple conversation to where you ask the right questions, you connect the right people. And depending on what kind of solutions that you provide for that moment, that could be something that you just give for free, or it's a value add just by talking to you or by knowing you or being connected to you. Of course, if there's going to be some kind of larger type of connection where a specific connection, a specific intro is going to lead to a deal or lead to a potential like huge collaboration, yes, you can capitalize on it to a certain extent. But what this allows for you is this personality of value, allowing to you to just exude value no matter where you go, and letting go of the expectation of when the ROI will come back to you, because relational capital will always come back to you as far as return on investment, because you never know if it's going to be tomorrow to where I say, hey, you know, Travis and I are talking and something happens and, oh, by the way, you know, I want to connect you with X, Y, and Z. And then boom, something happens tomorrow. Or it could happen 3 years down the road and somehow, you know, I meet somebody, Travis meet, you know, and we just connect some certain people, you know, so you just never know how this stuff's going to happen. Or it may not even be Travis or me returning investment on each other. It could be our connections that somehow allow ourselves to have that value come back to us. But if you're just operating under this radiant value, that you're just giving value and not in a scarcity mindset way, but an abundance mindset way, to where you know it's going to happen. You know something good is going to become of this value share, this me investing in other people with my time, attention, and focus, and sometimes resources. So this is an incredibly powerful way to take your organization and grow it in the exact intentional way in which your mission dictates, in which people and members of your team feel that this is the best way forward, or you as a leader of the nonprofit, being able to identify the keystone areas in which for you to grow and partner and do joint ventures with other organizations.
I really wanted to talk on this because everything you said is true, but a lot of people in the nonprofit world are obsessed with competition with other nonprofits when they feel like they're competing for dollars. And I don't think it's the competition, really. I think it's more like you said, it's more of the infinite game, not the finite game. It's about giving. I did an interview yesterday on Men of Abundance podcast with Wally Carmichael, and he said, giving is the highest level of happiness. And I agree with him 100%. And that's just not giving to an organization, that's giving of yourself. One of my personal values is to elevate everyone and to provide value without expectation. And it's aligning with exactly what Stephen and Lane talk about all the time. And I probably even got it directly from Stephen. But it is just such a game changer. I was at a watch party last night for one of my retired Navy friends who's a state senator in Oklahoma. And I got no business being there. I'm not in that. I don't have business to really offer them, but I like to go and say hi and meet different people. And I love hearing about what people are doing. And you never know what you've learned or just found out that's going to impact lives. I sat down and talked to someone from the Oklahoma Petroleum and Gas Alliance. And I'm like, well, how's anything that I know have anything to do with what he does? Well, the day before, I talked to someone that builds strategic partnerships with entities like banks and alliances like his, and how you co-brand a study, and how that co-branded study has far more value to both the organization and the actual business that's providing value. It's not that gold level bronze stuff that so many people do. And we cover this in my interview with Bruce Rosenthal that you can check out on the podcast. But he was blown away. He had no idea there was other ways to partner and other benefits he could actually get as a nonprofit, as an alliance with something like a bank, and how could their visions align? Because he had been growing up on the whole thing of gold, silver, bronze, platinum, styrofoam, Tesla, whatever level you have of giving, to provide a whole other avenue of value. So even though I had no business being there, I could sprinkle a little something into his life, and I saw him light up. He was one of those grumpy guys with the arms folded, and he lit up last night. And he was like, I had never heard anything like that. That is really cool. Here's my information. Let me know when that comes out. And just from sharing with him some of the good things that could impact him, his mood changed. He was elevated. He was happy to have met me. And I didn't do anything that hurt me. I didn't give away the farm for free. All I did was provide value without expectation. And now I have a new partnering crime, if you will, going forward. And, you know, a new alliance, a new partnership with someone that I just met because I didn't ask for anything. I just provided value.
Well, I think the key here is that, you know, what Wally was saying and what we're talking about here about giving is one of the highest or one of the best feelings that you can have in the world. But if it comes from an empty cup, you're not going to be able to have that incredible feeling. So, and this is why the first two sections of the book are so important, to where whenever you figure out who you are and how you interact in the world and what your purpose is, both as this life chapter and your life as a kind of a theme or a whole, it's much easier for you to then give freely, because we all know those people that give out of scarcity, that if I give, then I will then be able to receive. So that expectation of being able to receive, especially if we have some kind of, you know, expectation of like, well, if I give them this value, if I give them this strategy, this idea, this document or this connection or whatever it is, then they're going to owe me, or I'm going to have them give me something in return. And so that already, that mindset of I need to receive something, you know, is a very limiting belief. And so by understanding who you are and coming from a place of, yes, my cup is already filled and it's overflowing with abundance, with joy, good people, all this good stuff. And so you have this cup right in front of you and it's overflowing. It's much easier for you to give, you know, to pour a little bit of that into somebody else's cup. And that's exactly what happens when you're having these conversations or connecting with people or networking. And that is such a critical component, because I see it everywhere. We both know a lot of people that are giving from an empty cup or a half full cup, because they have that expectation of like, well, and we even see this sometimes where a group of four people with empty cups and they want to give to each other. And they think that by giving to each other, that they're able to then somehow magically have more altogether. And there may be something that happens because of that. But whenever you operate under this very powerful, you know, self-leadership, humble alpha principles, that you're able to know exactly who you are, have your cup filled, and then freely give without any expectation, because you know it's going to come back to you.
Absolutely. And in the nonprofit world, there's a whole other section of giving problems. Let me know right now if you've heard of this kind of person. They give all day long, but they refuse to receive. Oh, I'm in this nonprofit. I'm giving. I can't take a salary because it's wrong. Or I spend 40 to 50 hours at work. I spend 40 hours of my nonprofit, but I won't allow anyone to help me. I'm doing all this stuff. And I call it martyr syndrome, because you feel like you have to die on your cause and it has to be painful. It does not have to be painful. You do not have to go it alone. You are worth blessing too. Have you seen these people, Lane? Have you seen these people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, it's usually a much a deeper issue or a deeper situation to where they don't feel like they're worth it, or they feel like they have to earn the credit or earn the respect or earn, you know, whatever it is that they're doing good in the world. And Travis and I will both tell you right now that you're already worth it, that you're already crushing it, that you deserve all of the credibility, all of the accolades, all of the riches, whether that's salary or profit or whatever it is, that you deserve all that. And if you operate under that, knowing that you deserve it, that you don't have to earn it, as far as always having to give and never receiving, you know, it's such a cyclical loop that until you decide and flip that switch of like, you know what, I'm going to respect my time. I'm going to respect my energy and attention to, yes, I will take a salary. Yes, I might not, there might be, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 or $2,000 or whatever it is that you decide to pay yourself less in the organization. But that energy that I bring, that motivation, that enthusiasm is going to 10X or 15X or 5X or whatever it is. And you're going to be that much more effective. You're going to connect the dots. You're going to be able to elevate all those around you if you have more people within your organization. And the cascading effect is going to be just so powerful by that just one simple switch. You deserve it.
And if you continue to stiff arm those things, how long will it be before you close up shop, before you're so worn down that you can't provide services anymore? Not that you don't want to, but that you can't because you haven't taken the time to refill your cup. We've talked about almost all the steps that you talk about. We haven't identified them all, right? We've talked about activating, knowing who you are. We've talked about unleashing, knowing what you do in the world makes you feel alive, empowering, right? Creating space and elevating everyone for to allow them to step into their greatness. We've talked about momentum now and lighting the fire between others and relational capital. And we just alluded to having the empty cup, but how do you refill it? I know you like to travel, and this quality of life is your last major section here. What's that all about? What's quality of life?
Yeah, so quality of life reverts back to intentionality. And so the definition of quality of life for us is enjoying every single present moment, no matter where you find yourself. And so every present moment of your business, of your relationships with your family, your friends, going out and traveling, if that's what you like, or doing hobbies, every single moment you are fully enjoying it because you intentionally set up your life. And having that quality of life is that, yes, I have my business that I love, or my nonprofit, and I love doing X, Y, and Z in it. And I love having good relationships with friends and family, and I love traveling. Whatever that thing is that you're engineering your life to have this incredible feeling of quality of life, no matter if it's 9 a.m., you know, 3 p.m., 7, whatever time it is in the day that you've engineered this life. And so we put it in the end of the book because, you know, some people can just get confused. Like, okay, I'm just going to go travel and, you know, just do all the fun stuff without doing the actual work of figuring out who you are, you know, and asking yourself those tough questions. There's an incredible book called A More Beautiful Question that I really love because it allows us to ask ourselves better questions. And whenever we ask ourselves better questions, we get better answers. You know, just like the internet, there's literally every single answer that you can find in the world is on the internet, almost, right? But the power is, what question do I have? All this information, all this knowledge out there, what question do I have for my personal life, my personal journey, my business, my nonprofit? What's the question? Because the answers are already out there. The information's already out there. But what question do I ask myself? And so that's why asking these really powerful questions of what the hell do I really like to do? You know, what business or what nonprofit, what mission, what vision do I have? And then really digging in deep and answering those truthfully. Something that we have lightly touched, I don't think we've actually touched it, is the HIT principles that we have, honesty, integrity, and transparency. Honesty with yourself, being able to say, this is exactly what I like. This is what I don't like. This is how I operate in the world. This is, you know, and being honest with yourself, and it comes from within. And then you're able to express that honesty via transparency and say, hey, this is who I am, you know, and verbally communicating that, or expressing that with our behaviors and our actions with everyone around us. And of course the byproduct is the integrity, in which you can't buy. It's your reputation. And being able to say, this is how I've set my life up, this is the vision that I have for myself, this is all goes back to intentionality. And how intentional am I with my time? with what I'm doing in my nonprofit, how I interact with all the people that are around me, and being honest and saying, this is what I really like to do. So if you're, you know, if you're a weirdo, quote weirdo, and you like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, and that's the kind of thing that you like to do, then go for it. Like, let that be the thing that fills your cup, because there's a concept called hedonic calendaring. And it's basically you scheduling in your calendar, quality of life and recharge time. And this is so critical, because if you operate under consistent stress and you don't have any time for rest, then you're going to get burned out. You're going to not allow yourself that time to recharge, re-energize yourself, and give yourself more enthusiasm. And that is such a critical component. And hedonic calendaring is basically this, that every single day you have some kind of recharge or quality of life moment, and you schedule it, especially if you're one of those people that need a schedule. And it's so critical that you take that 30 minutes in the morning to meditate, or that 30 minutes and after lunch to go for a walk, or to play video games, or to have a conversation with somebody that you enjoy. Every single day you have these quality of life and recharge activities. Every week you have a couple hour block, or a whole day on the weekend. Once a month you have a full weekend. You go on a trip and you unplug and you remove yourself from the internet, or whatever it is that you do. And so this allows you to not have to wait till the 2 week vacation that everybody looks forward to, and try to cram all that recharge and that fun and that quality of life and
being able to say, more recharged than I ever was before.
Yeah, and you do so much recharging on your vacation that you come back exhausted.
And you need a vacation from your vacation. Yeah,
exactly. So, this is micro refinement in your life and in your nonprofit, and to be able to do it for yourself first and foremost, that recharges your cup. But then you create that culture within your organization and allow other people to then do that for themselves. And maybe part of your culture in your organization is to have quality of life events, quality of life days, quality of life half days on Friday, whatever it is that looks like the right answer for you and your culture and your organization. But calendaring it, making sure that it's a priority, because without that, what's it all for? You know, you can make the greatest impact in the world to thousands of people, hundreds of people in your community around the world and around your nation. But if you're miserable, you know, what's it all for?
Yeah, absolutely. You're not banking this up for, you know, 11 potential years when you say you're going to retire, and then you don't really retire anyway. And then before you know it, it's over and there's nothing you can do. You're listening to this and you're like, but Lane, I don't got no 30-minute time block today. I got to go to bed at a certain time. I got to wake up at a certain time. Look, those things happen. Okay. And if that's where you are, there's nothing wrong with that. But what you can do is when you show up to work and you look at the clock and you're 15 minutes early, take that 15 minutes in your car, put on an audiobook, put on some music, get the Headspace app. I know that's a meditation app. I use a different one, whatever. You know, take a few minutes for you. When you're running to the grocery store and you're doing errands, sit in your car. Make that your oasis away from everyone else. Block out the noise. Block out the time of day. If you're a single mom and you're running around crazy all the time, you get to the grocery store, no one's clocking you at the grocery store. Look, guys don't even know how long it's supposed to take. We have no idea. Neither do your kids. So go in there. Take your time. Go down every aisle. Find someone you know. Chat them up for a good 15 minutes. It's not going to hurt anything. It's not going to hurt anybody. Find those little micro oases throughout your day if you don't yet have a 30-minute block to set aside, like Lane suggests. Figure out how you want to design your life and what you want each day to look like, and then figure out how to get there. I'm still active duty Navy, right? I haven't retired yet. I'm doing the podcast on the side as a passion, and I view it as my mission to help the helpers. I'm working on monetizing this so when I retire from the Navy, I don't have to go work at some job I'm not interested in. If I can dedicate my full time, or whatever I deem full time looks like, based on my bills that are all paid off, based on my income, thank you, retirement from the military, and based on what I earn here as a laptop empire, I don't have to be in my house in Oklahoma City. I can wake up, I can spend time with the kids, I can go to the gym or work out with my wife or go on a walk. And then I can take a 10 a.m. appointment because I don't need that special income and my quality of life comes first. Then I maybe have a call with Lane and three other calls today, and I'm going to record another podcast later. And then after that, I've got dinner with my friend scheduled and I have a nice evening of reading. If that's something that you want to do, if you want to fish every day, figure out what you want your day to look like and how it needs to be structured to create that time to go fishing or whatever your thing is. It's up to you. It's up to you to design. It's up for you to decide. And it's up for you to contact Lane if you have any questions. Lane, where can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, you could check Stephen and I out at QOLenterprises.com. And you know, just to tie it back again, like the very first section of the book is we are what we decide. So until you decide that I want to live a intentional life, or I want to live a life on my own terms, or I want to design my life how I choose and how my family, how we choose together, until you decide, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to be handed to you on a silver platter. That it's the decision that gives you the power. All the things that happen after that, you know, you get luck and coincidence, you know, great connections, great people in your life are going to come to you. But until you decide, it's not going to happen. And that power of deciding is one of the greatest gifts that we can do for ourselves. QL Enterprises, you can find me on Facebook. Just search my name, Lane Ballone. And then I do a lot of stuff on Instagram at Increase Freedom.
Absolutely. Reach out to Lane, reach out to myself. And if you're interested again about the Nonprofit Architect Alliance Mastermind Group, drop me a line. We'll have links in the show notes. You'll be able to one click, get into the group and start experiencing the things that Lane and I do each and every day for our groups. Thanks again, Lane. It's been great.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.